Welcome to the Three Creeks Church Podcast. We're in a series called We Want a King, and we're discovering the character of God through the stories of Saul, David, and Solomon, the first three kings of the nation of Israel almost 3,000 years ago. We hope that through this series, you'll discover that nothing can separate you from the love of God.
Welcome to Three Creeks. My name's Joel. I love what I get to do. We're in week five of a series that we're calling We Want a King, and today I get to talk about David and Goliath. But if you haven't been here yet, let me just take 60 seconds and let me catch up to speed as to what has transpired in this 12-week series so far that I've kind of told you is kind of like it's a TV series. And it kind of in that way, it's a every individual message hopefully will be applicable and interesting to your life, but if you're here for the whole series, there are some themes and characters that transcend each individual message or episode, if you will, and so to know the whole story is awesome. Thank you so much, my friend. To know the whole story, it just makes the whole thing mean more, and so I encourage you, if you haven't heard the messages leading up to this one, to go back to Spotify or podcast or whatever, wherever you listen to your podcast, go back and listen to them, and it'll catch you up to speed a little bit better than even this will. But essentially what happened was, thousands of years before the story of David and Goliath, which you just saw masterfully performed on this stage a few minutes ago, prior to that, a couple thousand years before, God spoke to a man named Abraham. And Abraham lived far away from where David and Goliath, where this battle took place. But God said, hey, Abraham, I want you to go to the land that I'm promising you, and I'm going to make your descendants greater than the number of stars in the sky. And I'm going to bless every nation through you. And so Abraham moves there, and Abraham has kids, and he has kids, and Isaac has kids, and Jacob and Esau have kids, and Joseph has kids. Eventually, what happens to this Israelite people, they end up having to leave the promised land that they've been in, and they go to Egypt for 400 years of slavery. And then you've heard of Moses, and Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt and into, well, for 80 years, the desert. And they wander around for 80 years in the desert. And after 80 years, Moses dies and passes the torch to a guy named Joshua. And Joshua leads the Israelites into the promised land, the land that God had promised Abraham hundreds and hundreds of years before. They're back and they have their land back, but they have no peace. There's all these other nations that are evil and against the Lord that surround them on almost every side, and they attack and they attack and they attack, and the Israelites just try to defend and defend and defend. They have their land, but they have no peace. And it comes to the point where all the Israelites, for a period of time, they have judges. And if you go into your Bible, you can actually find a book called the Book of Judges, and it lists out the 12 or 13 or 14 different judges. And the last judge is named Samuel. And when Samuel is the judge, Samuel has two sons that are not ready to take the baton from him. They're not good men. They're deceitful men. And so the elders of Israel come around Samuel. They say, Samuel, like, we like you and we think you're a good leader, but your sons, they are not going to be able to do this very well. And so Samuel said, all the elders say to Samuel, we want to be like everybody else. We want a king. We want to be like the Amalekites, like the Philistines, like the Gideonites. We want to be like everybody else. We want a king. And so Samuel says, no, you don't. And they say, no, what do we do? We do. He tries to warn them, but they don't heed his warning. And they'd say, and Samuel finally says, fine, you can have a king. So they find the tallest, most handsome man in the land. His name was Saul. And they make him the first king of Israel. But quickly, it's interesting. I'm going to talk about this in a couple weeks, but it's very interesting. In Saul's, in his younger years, he is very humble. And he is very... He doesn't want the attention on him, and when he becomes the king, he becomes filled with pride and seeks glory and credit for himself. And immediately the favor of the Lord leaves him, and God rejects him as the first king. It's not an immediate thing, though. As soon as God rejects Saul, God says Samuel, who's still alive at that point, to go to Bethlehem to meet Jesse. And if you remember last week, John Scott, our connections pastor, shared with you that David was the youngest son of Jesse. He wasn't even presented by Jesse as an option to be the next king. But Samuel said, no, the rest of the boys, they're not who I'm looking for. Do you have any other sons? And Jesse says, well, I've got one more. He's in the backyard with the sheep. And Samuel says, well, bring him here. We're not going to eat until you bring out David. And they bring out David. And Samuel says, this is the one. Why does he pick David? Because God's not looking at the outside. He's looking at the inside. He's looking for somebody who has the heart of God. And today we're going to see David arrive on the scene. We're going to hear the story of David and Goliath. I'm sure that if you have spent any time, as Tyler jokingly mentioned, in VBS or Sunday school, I mean, David and Goliath is a story that it is a famous story, maybe the most famous story in the Bible. I would probably say the birth of Jesus and Christmas, the resurrection of Jesus and Easter would probably be one and two. But I would say David and Goliath has to be at least in three or four as far as most famous stories in the Bible. It's a story that transcends culture, right? In that, you know, if I told you that yesterday in college football, there was a matchup, it was a David and Goliath type matchup, you would totally understand what I mean. There's Michigan and Ohio State, like David and Goliath. Like, we're the better one, right? We're the bigger one. There's no chance that the Michigan, there's no chance. So anyways, I should have used Appalachia State. That would have been better, right? OH? That's what I'm talking about. So when I was a kid, when I was 2 years old, David and Goliath was my favorite story ever. And here's how I know that, because when I was 2 years old, my parents asked me what I wanted to name my brother, and I said, David. And my brother is named David, and he is alive and in the flesh, and he'll be here next week. I'll prove it. And I remember the reason why that I picked David was because my mom and dad loved the story of David and Goliath. And my dad would play this game with me where he would go into the other room, he would stuff pillows in his shirts and in his sweatpants, and he would come out growling like Goliath, like, I'm gonna take you down, Joel. And I was just 2 years old, and I would come at him and say, I'm coming at you in the name of the Lord my God. And I would throw something at him and then jump on him and elbow drop him right in the jaw. This is the kind of stuff that I grew up doing with my dad. And my favorite song when I was a kid went a little bit like this. Let me get a little bit of this. I don't think they want to hear it. Do you, Trevor? You want to hear it? Only a boy named... Wait, how does it go again? Only a boy named David, only a little sling. Only a boy named David, but he could pray and sing. Only a boy named David, only a bustling brook. Only a boy named David, five little stones he took. And one little stone went up in the sling, and the sling went round and round. And one little stone went up in the sling, and the sling went round and round. And round and round and round and round and round and round and round. And one little stone went up in the air. Boom! And the giant came tumbling down. Yeah. I love that song. I don't think I've sung it since I was four, but I used to love that song. I was trying to remember the words. I had to YouTube it this week to try to remember how to sing that one. And you guys, David and Goliath is one of these stories that it sticks with you. There's no way you can forget the story of David and Goliath. But let me just be honest for a second. Maybe you've heard it a lot of times, but how in the world can a story about a little kid and a giant named Goliath, how in the world can that apply to our lives today? Let's just be honest. There's a lot of Bible stories that you might read, like Noah's Ark or Moses in the Red Sea or David and Goliath, and you go, how is that really going to apply to my life? How does a story that happened 2,700 years ago, how is it going to change me today? Well, I'm going to try to answer that question today, and I'm very excited to do it. We're going to read almost through the whole chapter of 1 Samuel chapter 17. It's a little bit longer than I typically would read. We're going to cover more verses than I typically do, but I feel like it tells the story better than I can and certainly better than Tyler and Aaron can. So let's go there now. Open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 17. We'll start in verse 1, and I will pause kind of as we go and explain a little bit. And at the end, I'll show you how a story that happened this long ago affects us, impacts us, changes us today. Verse 1, the Philistines now mustered their army for battle and camped between Socah in Judah and Azekah at Ephes Damim. Saul countered by gathering his troops near the valley of Elah. So the Philistines and the Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley down between them. The picture that was up there when Tyler and Aaron were doing their skit, that is actually a picture of the Valley of Elah. There's probably maybe 500 yards between one side of the valley and the other. And you can go there today and you can still see the Valley of Elah. In fact, if you could, can you show that picture? They still got it. So essentially, I want you to picture the Israelites camping on that hill on the other side, and then the Philistines would be camped on this side over here. And actually, if you notice too, you see down like where a lot of the trees are, that would be a sign that there would be a river down there, and your boy David's gonna go get five little stones out of that river on his way to meet Goliath here in a couple of verses. So imagine, I mean, picture this. This is actually what it looked like 2,700 years ago with the Philistines on one side and the Israelites on the other, the Valley of Elah. Go to verse 4. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out from the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet. His bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. He also wore a bronze leg armor and carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam. I have no idea what a weaver's beam is. I imagine it's heavy, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across the Israelites. "Why are you all coming out to fight?" he called. "I'm the Philistine champion, but you are only servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me." Listen, read this. "If he kills me, then we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man who will fight me." When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. So Goliath's peacock tactics work, right? He comes out in front of them and he taunts them. He defies the armies of Israel. And what's very interesting about the way that Goliath comes at the Israelites, it's the same way that Satan, the enemy of God, comes at us now. The first thing Goliath tries to do is he tries to strike fear into his opponent. He tries to demoralize his opponent. He tries to get in their heads. He wants fear to be the recurring emotion that is going on in his enemy. And what's interesting to me is it's not just the Israelites that are terrified and deeply shaken, but it specifically names that Saul is terrified and deeply shaken. Saul is the king, and Saul is the most handsome man in the land. He's the tallest guy they could find. When they anointed him as king years before, it said that no man even was even as tall as his shoulders. He's a head and shoulders taller than everybody else. So if we're standing there and you're looking at a dude that's 9 feet tall, who's the logical opponent of Goliath? It's Saul. Saul's the clear choice. He's the guy that's supposed to go out there. When Goliath comes out, they've heard of Saul, this tall king of Israel. And Saul starts out, I told you a minute ago, he starts out, and when he is a humble king early in his early years, man, he is a conqueror. He is a mighty, mighty warrior. But all of a sudden, because of the favor of the Lord, it has left Saul. Saul, you just see him being a coward, looking around, hoping somebody else could be as tall as him and will take this man on because he doesn't want to. He's the one who's deeply shaken and terrified. Now, verse 12, the setting changes. Now, David was a son of a man named Jesse, and Epaphrite from Bethlehem in the land of Judah. Jesse was an old man at the time, and he had 8 sons. Jesse's 3 oldest sons, Eliab, Abinadab, and Shemaiah, they had already joined Saul's army to fight the Philistines. David was the youngest son. David's 3 oldest brothers stayed with Saul's army, but David went back and forth so he could help his father with the sheep from Bethlehem. For 40 days... 40 days, every morning and evening, the Philistine champion strutted in front of the Israelite army. And one day, Jesse said to David, "Take this basket of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread and carry them to your brothers and give these 10 cuts of cheese to their captain. See how your brothers are getting along and bring back a report on how they are doing." David's brothers were with Saul and the Israelite army at the Valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines. So David's the youngest one. He doesn't get to go be in the army. The older brothers get to go be in the army. And David is essentially Uber Eats running back and forth the 12 miles between home and where the battle's at. And so David's dad says, "Hey, I haven't heard anything for a while. Why don't you think he's heard anything in a while?" Because nobody at the army wants to tell anybody what's going on. They're all embarrassed that for 40 days in a row, Goliath has come out and challenged them, and they're all petrified. Nobody wants to fight him. There's not a whole lot of reports coming home about what's happening. And so Jesse says, "Go find out." So he gives him some bread. He gives him some cheese. he says, go and tell David, or go and tell your brothers, and go and give this food to the brothers' captains. And they go, it's 12 miles between the Valley of Elah and Bethlehem, so David makes the journey. So David left the sheep with another shepherd and set out early the next morning with gifts. As Jesse had directed him, he arrived at the camp just as the Israelite army was leaving for the battlefield with shouts and battle cries. Soon the Israelite and Philistine forces stood facing each other, army against army. David left his things with the keeper of the supplies and hurried out to the ranks to greet his brothers. And as he's talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, comes out from the Philistine ranks, and David heard him shout his usual taunt to the army of Israel. As soon as the Israelite army saw him, they began to run away in fright. "Have you seen the giant?" the men asked. "He comes out each day to defy Israel. The king has offered a huge reward to anyone who kills him. He will give that man one of his daughters for a wife, and the entire man's family will be exempted from paying taxes." Do you see how badly Saul doesn't want to be the guy? He wants to dish this responsibility onto somebody else. He says, "I will give you riches. Your whole family will be tax exempt. I will give you my daughter as your wife. I'm inviting you into the royal family if you will take this burden from me." And look what David says. The rewards are staggering. We're talking about riches here. Look what David says. David asked the soldier standing nearby, "What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway that he is allowed to defy the armies of the living God?" What this is saying is that David doesn't care about the financial rewards. He cares about the honor of the living God. Do you see that in the text? He's not stirred because of the prestige or the financial gain. He wants to beat Goliath. He is furious and shocked because somebody would dare defy the name of the Lord our God, while Saul is trying to tempt everybody else in the army. Hey, you can have a lot of glory for yourself. David's heart is stirred to take this upon himself because he wants to get God the glory that he deserves, not glory for himself. Do you see the difference? David doesn't care about the riches. He doesn't care about his wife. He doesn't care about the tax-exempt status. Who is this guy that he would defy the army of the living God? And when word gets out that David is beginning to ask these questions, when word gets out that David is interested in fighting against Goliath, Saul calls for David. He says, "Bring the young man to me." And David goes into the presence of Saul. Skip down to verse 32. This is what David tells Saul. "Don't worry about this Philistine. I'll go fight him." And Saul replies, "Don't be ridiculous. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're a boy. He's been a man of war since his youth." But David persists. "I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, and when a lion or bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and I club it to death." Come on. "I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it again to this pagan Philistine too. He has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from the Philistine." And Saul finally consents. "All right, go ahead, and may the Lord be with you." I want you to think about this though. Put yourself in the shoes of Saul. The stakes are extremely high. We're not talking about 500 yards of land that's up for grabs. We're talking about the freedom of the people that is at stake here. You with me? We're not talking about a little battle between a couple of, you know, hundreds of people. We're talking about thousands of armies camped on both sides of the hill. And Goliath says back in verse 8, "Choose one man to come fight me. And if he beats me, we'll be your slaves. But if I beat him, you will be our slaves." And so the freedom of the people is up for grabs. But Saul is such a coward. He can't let this go on forever. He can't let Goliath just keep coming out because that way his reputation will be destroyed. But he doesn't want to fight him himself. And so the only option he sees as viable is letting somebody else do it, even though he's probably going to lose. So he says, "Fine, David, you go." But the first thing he does, he says, "You can go, but come on into my office. Let me strap you up a shield. Let me strap you up some armor. So look at verse 38. Saul gave David his own armor, a bronze helmet and a coat of mail, which I'm not sure. I'm picturing that. I had no idea what that is, a coat of mail. I'm picturing a lot of letters sewn together. I'll have to look that up. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he had never worn such things before. "I can't go in these," he protested to Saul. "I'm not used to them." So David took them off again. You see, armor and military technology and military tactics were not going to be the reason that David won this battle. David wasn't going to let it happen. David was positioning himself so that when this battle was over, a logical person was only going to be able to decide that it was God who fought this battle for him. David wasn't hedging his bets. He was going all in with the power of God. And look what he does next. This is the good part. He picks up five smooth stones from a stream. He puts them in his shepherd's bag. And then, armed with only a shepherd's staff and sling, he starts across the valley to fight the Philistine. And Goliath walked out towards David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at his ruddy-faced boy. "Am I a dog?" he roars at David, "that you come to me with a stick?" And he cursed David by the names of his gods. "Come over here. I'll give your flesh to the birds. I'll give your flesh to the wild animals," Goliath yells. And David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Look at this. This is important. Verse 46, "Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there's a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here," these are the last couple of verses, stick with me, "and everybody assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with a sword and a spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us." As Goliath moves closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. He reached into his shepherd's bag, taking out one of the stones, and he hurled it with his sling, and it hit the Philistine in the forehead. And the stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. And David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath, and he used it to kill him and cut off his head. Now, I think, I'm just guessing, you've heard a version of this story before. Maybe not, but I think most of you probably have. I want you to think about being one of the Israelites for a minute. You know, you realize there's thousands of them. And so there's not 10 people in a circle huddled up where David gets to go, "Okay, guys, I think I'm going to use my slingshot instead of the sword. Is everybody okay with that?" They're not taking a vote. In fact, it's very unlikely that everybody even knew what was going on. All they know is that Goliath comes out. They've heard rumors of this guy who's been asking questions. They've seen him try on the armor and then take off the armor. And rumors are circulating, like, what is actually going on? And I imagine there's people on the outskirts of this army looking down into the valley. They see David going down, no sword, no shield, no helmet, no nothing. It looks like he's got a piece of rope hanging out of his pocket. They're going, what is he doing? What is he doing? And he goes down into the brush where you can't really see him. There's overhanging trees. There's a river down there. And then he just exits the other side of this little oasis, if you will. And he exits the other side, and they see Goliath coming forward and David going forward. And they're going, what is going on here? What is going on here? And then all of a sudden, David pulls out his slingshot, his sling, and he starts going like this. They can't hear anything that Goliath said. They can't hear anything that David is saying. They're just watching this from a distance. Can you imagine it for a minute? And when David's going like this, they're going, we better start running. This is not going to go well. And David goes like this, and then they can't tell if it hits him or not. They don't see the little stone. They don't know if it was successful until they see Goliath start to stumble. Can you imagine what would have happened in your heart? You're literally ready to start running the other direction because your life is on the line. And all of a sudden, you see the enemy that came out 40 days in a row and defied you begin to stumble like this. And he falls face on the ground. What would have happened in your heart as you watched that happen? Oh my, right? Oh my goodness, what just happened? The enemy that came out, the kid had a slingshot. And imagine being David. You come with the cheese and the bread. You have no idea what is going on. There are no reports coming back about Goliath. That's why Jesse sent him in the first place. And you go, and David goes out there. He goes, what is going on here? And they say, there's this guy, Goliath. And as David is getting there, Goliath comes out and defies the army. And David's going, wait, he's going to defy the name of the living God? See, to me, think about everybody else in the army. Everybody else in the army is basking in the safety of the sidelines. When Goliath comes out, they just try not to make eye contact with anybody because they feel guilty because they're not courageous enough to do it. They just sit there and eat bread and cheese and wait for the next day. I mean, they are basking in the safety of the sidelines. None of them are willing to put their life on the line. They don't leave the comfort zone. They don't leave the safety of the sidelines. Nobody else is willing to go out there. And the narrative for us, think about this. The narrative for us is when we tell this story or we hear this story, it's so easy to be like, man, David conquered Goliath. David beat Goliath. That's kind of the, in fact, if you opened up a little Sunday school book, it might even say David versus Goliath. I'm like, I don't think David would have titled the story that way. I do not think David would be thrilled. If he was sitting right here and I said David beat Goliath, he would raise his hand and say, no, 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 no. Didn't you read what it said? Didn't you read what it said? Because when David tells the story about when he killed the lions and the bears with the club and the jaw and that whole thing. Look, did you notice what it said? David did not brag about himself. I just read you what he said. He says, the Lord rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear, and he will rescue me from the Philistine. He gives all the credit to the Lord, all the glory to the Lord. When they try to put all the armor on him, he says, this is gonna make it look like I did something. This is gonna make it look like we're smarter than them or we're better than them. And so, take this stuff off. This just doesn't even fit anymore. I'm gonna make sure that no logical person can come to any conclusion other than God did this. And then when he goes out and faces Goliath, look at the words that he says. In verse 46, he does not say, I will conquer you. He says, the Lord will conquer you. He does not say, the whole world will know that I am a brave hero. It says, the whole world will know that there's a God in Israel. He doesn't say, this is my battle. He says, this is the Lord's battle. And he does not say, I will take you down. He says, God will give you to us. David is not okay with us giving him the credit. The whole point of the whole thing for David was to give God all the glory and all the credit and put God on display. Are you with me? Is anybody tracking with me right now? This is not a story about David. This is a story about God. David wanted you to know that. And David, listen to what David did. What David did as a human individual being, he had the decision, he really did have the free will to stay in the safety of the sidelines, or he had the opportunity to take a step of faith, to leave the safety of the sidelines, to leave the comfort zone, if you will, and step out, and he had the opportunity to put God on display, and he did it. And we still read about him 2,700 years later. Because of David's boldness to step out and put God on display. This is the greatest pitfall of this story, though. And let me just be honest with you. When we read this story, and we go, wow, David and Goliath, wow, what a great story. How does that apply to my life? Well, insert yourself into the story. I must be David, and that means that I must go now and defeat some kind of proverbial Goliath in my life. That's how we think about it. But if we're not careful, we can become very quickly overwhelmed thinking that Goliath has to be a life-altering, career-changing, everything, monumental, biggest moment of your life. We think that Goliath has to be that big for it to count. We think that we have to go and sell all of our stuff or move to another country or adopt 9 children or change jobs. We're like, if it's not big and if it doesn't change everything about my life, well, then it can't possibly be a Goliath. That's not the story of David and Goliath. It has to be huge. And I felt led by the Lord. I came here to tell you this morning that all of our Goliaths look a little different. It doesn't have to be the biggest decision you've ever made in your life. All of our Goliaths look a little bit different. What's really big to you might not be really big to me. And what's really big to me might not be really big to you. I think the easiest way to define what a Goliath is in your life is just to ample this simple question. What has God been prompting you to do that you're scared to do? What is God prompting you to do that you are scared to do? What has God been asking you to do recently that you are nervous about, that is uncomfortable for you, that makes you leave your comfort zone? What is that for you? Let me ask it this way. What idea have you felt like God has been putting on your heart and he has kept it on your heart for a while that would force you to leave what you know, to be uncomfortable, to be nervous, to step into? What is God prompting you to do that you're scared to do? Because it just looks different for different people. And it doesn't have to be something that changes all of your life forever. It might. Don't get me wrong. It might. Some of you may be called to change your career or to move to another country. I'm not saying that that's not possible. What I'm saying is that we don't have to make Goliath into this one-time thing in our lives. A lot of times, this story is supposed to give us encouragement for every single day of our lives when we take on individual, smaller things that are big deals to us, that force us to be uncomfortable and put God on display. Many of you guys here, you guys know who Jared and Nina Thomas are. They're some of my best friends. They have been here since day one. And Jared and Nina Thomas recently put what I'm talking about on display. They put God's love on display. Jared and Nina, they love Jesus so much. And they want people of other faiths to at least know who Jesus is. They're not trying to impose. They're not trying to debate. They're just trying to communicate the love of God. And so they got on this app where somehow you find people with different interests. And they started a Bible study in their house. But they invited people from all different faiths to come to their house. And they said, you get to share what your faith is about. And so a Hindu person came, and a Muslim person came, and a Quaker came, and a Buddhist came, and a Jewish person came. And all these different people have come to their house. They meet every single month. Jared and Nina have not only said, hey, come and hear from us, but they've entered into a relationship and a friendship with them. And they've gone to some of the other churches, some of their services, just to build a relationship so that they might get to share the love of Jesus. Do you think that that was comfortable for them? Would it be comfortable for you? It would be very uncomfortable for me to do that. I hang out with essentially all Christians. I'm embarrassed to say that, but it's true. And I look at Jared and Nina and I'm like, man, if I would just leave the safety of the sidelines and I could enter, I could get God on display if I would do something that I'm scared to do. There's another person in here. His name's Josh Moore. He was Goliath, the dancer. When we started the EL classes here at Goshen Lane, I knew that Josh Moore was going to have an impact through that. I just knew it. He had just spoken to me about his heart for people and for serving people. And I just heard this story this week. And by the way, none of these people know that I'm saying anything about them. They'd probably be mad if I had told them, so I didn't even ask him. So Josh Moore, I heard this story this week. On the first week of EL classes, there was somebody who did not have a ride here. And my inclination is like, well, sorry, you know, find a ride. Like, I'm so not empathetic or whatever. But Josh, he goes, I'll pick her up. And so he goes and picks up a woman named Bina from the country of Nepal. And he brings her here to class. And after class, he takes her home. And when they're pulling in the driveway of her home, she says, would you like to come in and learn a little bit about our culture? And Josh says, yes. And that would be, I mean, he could have easily said, no, I'm okay. Thanks for the offer. Maybe next time. But he chose to leave the safety of the sidelines and enter into that. And he goes into their house. And then for 2 hours, he drinks some tea. He learns about Nepalese culture. And he helped their kids with their homework for 2 hours. And I go, that's a guy who's leaving the comfort of, he's leaving his comfort zone to go and put the love of God on display. It's not about Josh. Are y'all tracking with me? He didn't post it on Facebook. He didn't tell anybody, but it wasn't about Josh. He was trying to get God and God's love and God's character on display. This week, I'm sitting over some sushi with my friend John Rupert. Some of you guys know who he is. If you don't know who he is, he's the guy that just stands back there and smiles at everybody, makes everybody feel great. I love John Rupert, and John Rupert is just growing so much in his faith. And we were talking, I said, John, I mean, what's it been looking like recently for you to follow Jesus? And he starts talking about how he has been meeting and discipling a number of the younger guys in our church, having lunch with them, having breakfast with them, just getting into people's lives. And I said, John, is that comfortable for you? And he said, well, it is now. I said, but a year ago, can you imagine even thinking about doing this? He goes, no way. No way can I imagine doing that. It would have just been so foreign. I felt so ill-equipped. I felt so uncomfortable, but I just felt like God wanted me to do it. And so now you've got a couple other people in this room that are nodding their heads going, yes, because of John's willingness to step away from his comfort zone and do what he was scared to do, I'm experiencing God in my life. And then I kind of share with John and I go, John, you know, this Sunday, I'm going to kind of ask everybody in the service, you know, what has God been prompting you to do that you're scared to do? And I'm all excited about the question. I'm excited about what it might do for you. And John looks at me and goes, well, Joel, what's yours? And I said, John, I'm the pastor. I ask the questions. I don't have to answer them. No, I didn't say that. I kind of did because I was like, wow, that really catches me off guard. I don't like being asked that question. I don't like being put out of my comfort zone. I don't like being nudged or reminded by somebody to do something that God has already told me to do. I don't like that. It's an uncomfortable feeling. But John looked at me and said, Joel, what's God prompting you to do that you're scared to do? And I'm like sitting there going, he goes, I think you know what it is. I'm like, dang it, I do know what it is, but shut up, man. I know what it is. And to honor some of the folks who are in my life, I'm going to spare some of the details. But the bottom line is that God has put a couple people in very close proximity to me who do not believe the same things that I believe. And I have been a coward in even approaching them and even starting a friendship with them. And God has been putting this on my heart for 2 years or more. And I have just made excuse after excuse as to why I should just do it later. Somebody else will do it. I mean, it's so clear to me. When John asked the question, it was the first thing that came into my mind. And God wants me to leave the safety of my side of the road and walk across the road and start to build a friendship with people who don't believe everything that I believe. Here's the thing. Doesn't seem like maybe that big of a deal to you. That's my point. That's my point, that what's big to me might not be big to you, but what's big to you might not be big to me. We don't have to make these Goliaths that are these insurmountable goals. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the idea that God has put on your heart, he's kept it on your heart, and you just haven't had the courage to do it. What is that? What makes you scared? What makes you scared? And the point of doing it is not to pat yourself on the back. The point of doing it would be to put God on display. And for you, it just looks so different. The worst thing you could do right now, is compare what God is asking you to do to what you heard somebody else do. It's the worst thing you could do. The best thing that you could do is just answer the question, what is God prompting you to do that you're scared to do? What is it? It's different than anybody else's. It might be taking a meal to somebody who just had a baby. You don't even know them very well yet. It could be giving a ride to somebody. It could be starting a Bible study where you work. I don't know what your lunch break is like. If you have a break room or, you know, maybe once every 2 weeks or whatever. I don't know. It could be that. It could be giving financially to your church or to another organization that loves God and serves people. It could be entering into that to the point where it makes you uncomfortable. You realize this doesn't count if it doesn't make you nervous. If it doesn't make you sweat a little bit, it doesn't count. We're talking about something that you're actually nervous and scared to do, but God is putting it on your heart so that God could be on display. So that if anybody would try to give you the credit, you would raise your hand and go, no, 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 no. This was never about me. Maybe there's somebody in the room that thing is today giving your life to Jesus. Maybe you've never done that. Maybe when I ask the question, what is God prompting you to do right now, and you're scared to do it, maybe it's just giving your life to Jesus for the first time and you're nervous and you're scared because it's foreign and you're a little uncomfortable with it and you're not sure what your family or your friends are going to say, maybe that's you though. Maybe you're supposed to step into that. And over time, you will see that that is a decision that will put God on display. This is the story of David and Goliath. It's about somebody who left the safety of the sidelines, did something that everybody was scared to do, and he went out and he put God on display. And we're still talking about it. So here's how I want to end today. Our prayer team's going to come up here in just a minute. I'll invite you up just a second. I'm going to give you 3, 4, maybe 5 minutes. If you want to just tell somebody what it is that God has put on your heart, our prayer team is here for you. You could just come up and just share it with them as a form of accountability. If you want prayer that you would have the courage and to be encouraged to actually follow through with this one this time, our prayer team is here for you. If you want to give your life to Jesus for the first time, if that is what God is prompting you to do, our prayer team is here for you. We're going to play some music. I'm going to give you 3, 4, maybe 5 minutes to sit on your own, to think about this story, to think about some of the questions that I asked. And I'm just going to let God do what he wants to do. So go ahead, take your time, and let's just pray.
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com.